Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, you're listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that Romaine is like ready to go at it about meta earnings.
Listen,
I like it.
Who makes fun of
meta? I like the energy.
Right? I keep saying with climate change, we're all going to be living in the metaverse because you're not going to be able to go outside. But having said that, who knows?
I know someone who knows everything.
Does she?
Yeah. We've got Alex Brinker
No pressure.
We're very pleased to have her with us. In fact, she was in here before these earnings even came out. She's furiously typing away, getting to the bottom of what's happening with shares of Facebook. It is formerly, of course, Facebook. Now it's Meta Platforms, just out with earnings. I want to get back to these right now. And we got Bloomberg Technology Reporter Alex Brinker here in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio to do it. Okay, so Alex, I know you weren't paying attention to what Carol, Romaine, Katie, and I were all yelling about because you were actually doing important real work. But now that you've had a good 6 minutes to dig
into
these
earnings.
Excuse
me, Tim, but I was doing real work, too.
I was, too. You were. We were. What are you seeing? What sticks out here?
I'll tell you what's jumping out to me in 6 minutes that we're also sharing on the blog. On the terminal, revenue beat for the fourth quarter. They also seem to have some pretty strong revenue estimates for the first quarter. First quarter revenue estimates of $26 billion to $28.5 billion straddle what analysts were estimating. So that's exciting. I bring that.
That's ad dollars?
That is the majority of their revenue is ad dollars.
Okay.
So close to upwards of 90% of that is ad dollars. So that to me is saying that what we heard from Snap yesterday, that the malaise in the ad market is leveling off at least to the level of folks expect, that seems to kind of play out that narrative. Who knows what we'll hear on the call? We're looking for some more clues on where the ad market is going, but that top line number is really jumping out at me. Another number that's
more so than the buyback?
The buyback was my number two.
Got it.
$40 billion in share buybacks. Look, last year, 2022, was the worst year on record for Meta. They fell, 64% on the year. So we've had a little bit of a recovery in the stock. Definitely a jump in the stock this afternoon, up 15%. But clearly, the company thinks that the shares are undervalued. Now, investors sold off last year basically because they're concerned about where this company is going in terms of strategy. You have the ad business, like we said, makes up a majority of revenue, but a lot of the focus and the renaming of the company has been on this kind of far-flung virtual reality future that the company calls the metaverse. Now, when it comes to earnings, the metaverse sits in a business unit called Reality Labs. Reality Labs is a big loser. They lost $4.28 billion in the fourth quarter, more than analysts estimated. So when it comes to the hard questions, that will be on costs, and Reality Labs seem to be the big cost suck with a big question mark these days.
But Mark Zuckerberg coming out in a statement saying that 2023, the management theme is, quote, year of efficiency, focused on becoming a stronger and more nimble organization. Is it a nod to the thousands of people who were laid off just a few weeks ago?
13% of the workforce laid off in the end of last year. So yes, it needs to be. And it seems like he's projecting that it's not just a change in the cost structure, but it's a change in how the company is thinking going forward. Remember, this is a company that's only seen growth up and to the right, right? We've seen now sales declines for the first time a few quarters in the row ever for Meta or when it was called Facebook. So it seems like they're trying to kind of at least project to the street a reason to give patience, which is what he was asking for last quarter, and he wasn't afforded by the market when the stock fell 25% on the last earnings day. So it seems like he is needing to change his tune a little bit more from trust us, we know what the future is going to look like, to, oh, look, we're actually going to be efficient now and kind of drive toward running a more kind of priority-focused business.
If that first quarter revenue outlook was a miss or disappointing, would we be having a much different conversation right now?
Absolutely. That's what we saw happen with Snap yesterday. So if that first quarter was a miss, I think you can continue to have kind of questions around, look, if you want to build a decades-off virtual reality future, mm-hmm. you got to fund it somehow. Don't forget about the bread and butter.
With the caveat that this is an impossible question to answer, I'm going to ask you anyway. Is the 16.6% rise in Facebook stock right now about the share buyback or about the revenue number?
I would guess it's a mix of both. If this comes back down to earth, I will say it's the share buyback. If it continues to stay high, I would say it's the revenue number. And not to throw it to tomorrow, but we get Alphabet earnings tomorrow as well. Alphabet and Meta are the two kind of monsters in the digital ad space. They've really traded off as there's been kind of economic uncertainty and marketers pulling back on spending. So if that stays up and Alphabet hits, then I think this is more about the first one.
Not necessarily scientific, but just doing our GIPO aftermarket, you know, function on the terminal, it looks like as soon as the revenue number hit, the stock shot up. I'm not saying that it didn't go a teeny bit higher on the buyback news, but as soon as that revenue number, and I would agree that if they're able to fund it, right, people are going to, investors are going to say, okay, go ahead, because you're still making a ton of money.
So Facebook is an advertising company now that sells ads in Instagram and in Facebook.
Hasn't it always kind of been? It has,
but you know, over the last year, Mark Zuckerberg has said, we are a metaverse company. We changed the ticker name. We're investing in Reality Labs, which, as you noted, lost billions of dollars in the fourth quarter.
Alex, are you a Romain 2.0?
Well, Facebook stock up 17.7% right now, Alex. Okay, so... I have so many questions for you. If we think about this from the perspective of Snap, what did they get right and Snap get wrong?
Meta got right not taking a big hit to kind of change its ad product in the first start of the year. Meta's ads on Facebook and Instagram are really focused on direct response. So that's where you are selling products immediately. That's the slice of the digital ad world where marketers are still spending because it is seeing their dollars go to work immediately. Snap had some very Snap-focused changes yesterday where they said we're actually rolling out a lot of technology updates to our ad product and we're going to take a big hit in the first quarter. That being said, Meta's the giant, right? Aside from Google. So Meta carries a lot more weight. They have a much larger chunk. They had a duopoly, them and Google, which they lost last year, but they're still kind of the strongest ones out there. So I think, again, some leveling off in terms of some of this malaise in the ad market seems to be positive news, and that's reading through in at least the revenue projections.
$2 billion. You, I think, on the blog were saying, I think that's the first time that they've hit 2 billion in daily active users. I mean, the behemoth. Cool stuff. Alex Borinka, thank you so much. She covers a lot of the technology world for us here at Bloomberg. Joining us in studio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec from Bloomberg Radio.
All right, so maybe you've heard of it, the nonprofit Core Response, started by actor Sean Penn, that's really stepped up when it comes to helping people in Haiti, that after the 2010 earthquake, for saving American lives during the pandemic, and doing so much more. So Tim, sounds like a lot of good deeds. I'm really coming in to help up, clean up messy and difficult situations, right?
And yet, as a Bloomberg Business Week investigation has found out, what was going on in the inside of the nonprofit, according to employees, was another mess as well. It's an exclusive story. It's in the upcoming new issue of Bloomberg Business Week. It's out on newsstands tomorrow. It's already online at Bloomberg.com/businessweek and, of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. We've got with us Bloomberg News Wealth Team reporter Sophie Alexander, along with the editor of Bloomberg Business Week, Joel Weber, both in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Joel, I know this charity because they did so much work in Haiti and so much work during the pandemic. What happened?
Well, when CORE was getting started in places like Haiti, really was disaster relief response, right? And it was actually fairly modest. Not, you know, dozens of employees, not, you know, millions upon millions of dollars, but COVID really changed that. And what the Sean Penn nonprofit did was really double down in Los Angeles, and it became effectively like a de facto healthcare operation. But with that growth and this massive influx of money that it saw, there also created some chaos, and I think that chaos led to Sophie's reporting. So Sophie, what did you hear and where did that lead you?
Yeah, so like you said, they grew incredibly quickly during the pandemic. They were just about a dozen employees beforehand, and then they grew to thousands over a matter of months, and less than $7 million in revenue in 2019 to $122 million in 2021. So that's enormous growth. And so I started reaching out to employees after I heard about this, and basically they were saying, yeah, it was a total mess inside. A lot of employees said there were a lot of financial issues. A lot of employees told me about sexual harassment at some of the testing sites, including the one at Dodger Stadium, which was one of the largest, if not the largest, testing site in the U.S. during the pandemic.
What I found so remarkable about this was the way headcount exploded. You point out in your piece that headcount went to 3,000 plus people. And some context there, as you write, Sophie, it's larger than the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation at one point.
That's right. They're an operating nonprofit. So, you know, like they had all these people on the ground, and they started out just by getting volunteers to respond to the pandemic, but quickly started turning them into full-time employees. And a lot of these were young people working their first jobs. But then later on, they brought also very experienced nonprofit employees from other organizations who knew how this was supposed to go.
Okay, so the story starts with the fundraiser, and to just give a sense of the star power and the setting and where, you know, money gets raised for a nonprofit like Core Response, like, take us there. Take us to Miami.
Sure. So a nonprofit like this, you know, it's a celebrity nonprofit. They spend a good amount of time and money on fundraisers. And these fundraisers are home to Sean Penn and a lot of his rich and famous friends, like Leonardo DiCaprio. The one in the story at Art Basel in Miami in 2021 was hosted by the pop singer Anita. Delphine Arnault, the heir to the world's largest fortune, was also there. And everyone was told that this was going to raise money for Latin America COVID response. That's what was on the invitations that were shared with Business Week. That's what was on the marketing materials. And I spoke with employees who said it took a lot of nagging of the CEO to, hey, why hasn't this money reached Brazil yet? Because that was basically the only place they were doing such work at the time. Why hasn't it gone to Brazil yet? And the CEO was essentially like, you know, it doesn't matter if we actually spend it in Brazil. That's what these employees were telling me. And according to an email that we saw, it ultimately took almost 6 months to make it to Brazil. And that's ultimately where all the money was allocated. But it's kind of a confusing mess in between.
Sophie, is this about like an organization? Like when you talk about the money, how it started out and then, you know, you're talking about raising $200 million. Is it a case of an organization, a nonprofit that all of a sudden just ran really quickly and they didn't have the people, the infrastructure, the systems in place, or is this about an organization that maybe internally had some really bad eggs?
Well, yeah, their response to our reporting is basically, you know, they responded really quickly to the pandemic. It was a huge challenge and an unprecedented one. And they rose their hands and said, we're going to do this.
And they did it well, to be fair.
And they did it well. They did, you know, respond to the pandemic well. And that's what they're saying. But, you know, I'm talking to people who are saying we're almost 3 years on now and it's still internally a problem, financially a problem, and they're saying that a lot of this runs up to leadership basically not wanting to do much.
And so walk us through some of the financial problems that some of the employees flagged to you in your reporting.
Sure. So it's a lot of, you know, kind of mundane stuff that's kind of technical, but like payroll stuff, for example. I spoke with an employee who was getting paid for months after they had quit. And they had raised the issue with the nonprofit and
the
hadn't
problem?
Heard anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's great. Something, you know, beats the alternative.
Okay, thank you, Joel. And Tim, now we know. No, but it sounds like oversight financially
millions of dollars coming in, and then somebody who's not even employed anymore is still getting paid. It's seriously kind of a problem.
And federal dollars too, taxpayer dollars.
Yeah. Right, exactly. What about, like, who are you hearing from beyond the employees? Anybody from senior management?
They didn't.
Is Sean calling up?
No, they declined to make Sean available for an interview, the CEO and the COO available for an interview.
Well, Carol makes a good point. What is Sean Penn's involvement?
So he's the chair of the board, which basically means he's responsible for the thing. If there are problems, he's responsible for making sure that leadership is doing their job and doing it well and responsibly. But on a day-to-day, what people tell me is he's not really involved all that much, except for kind of as a figurehead.
And who is? Who's running point?
It's the CEO, Ann Lee.
And tell us more about her and Sean and how they came to basically co-lead this organization.
Sure. So they met in Haiti in the wake of the 2010 earthquake. She had been working in nonprofits in Haiti specifically for a while. She kind of bounced around until ultimately she was brought into CORE in 2015, mm-hmm. made CEO in 2016. And people say that Sean and her are close. You know, like they told us that they meet monthly. People said that it seems like a lot of what Anne does is to try to make Sean look good and to try to keep Sean happy. A lot of people said that, you know, like it ultimately runs up to her. Everything runs up to her. She's the one who makes their decisions. And if there's an issue and it's ultimately run up to her, she's the one who's saying it's not our problem.
Okay. So obviously CORE had this response to COVID. As those test sites and vaccine sites have wound down, curious what's happened since they made that initiative?
Now they're in Ukraine. Sean Penn was with Zelensky the day mm-hmm. Russia invaded. And so that really opened up an opportunity for CORE at a time when it was kind of hard for other international nonprofits to get involved. They're also responding to domestic hurricanes, so in Puerto Rico, in Florida. And what I've been hearing from not just employees, but also some partners who are seeing CORE's work on the ground is that, you know, it seems like they're showing up to these disasters, they're taking a bunch of photos, they're fundraising a bunch of money, and then they're paying less attention to how that money gets spent to actually respond to the disasters.
Yeah, one of the things that sticks with me is like they're known in this world for showing up with cameras before almost anything else, right? Like be seen, the dollars keep flowing that way, but maybe there's not that much impact after the fact.
That's what felt like one common denominator. They made sure that there was good visuals, even if they weren't necessarily very involved. 20, 25 seconds, a net takeaway of kind of where this is or where it stands?
It's complicated.
Okay. I know. It's never... Yeah.
Well, one thing that I think it boils down to, this is California.
Yeah.
All this rolls up to AG. So if AG is going to look into anything, we've clearly spoken enough current and former employees that there's some stuff to look into here.
Yeah, and I would say definitely do a read through because the sexual harassment concerns, which were also brought to the attention of the top, that seem to have been dismissed, at least according to the employees' accounts. Great story. Sophie Alexander, Wealth Team reporter at Bloomberg News here in our Interactive Brokers studio. This story in the upcoming new issue of Bloomberg Business Week. Our thanks to Jill Weber, the editor of Business Week. You can also find it at Bloomberg.com and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIEFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekdays from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live to our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Focused on Meta, but just a few weeks ago, we were focused on Microsoft, their interest, and then subsequent further investment in OpenAI's ChatGPT, which has really kicked off, safe to say, Tim, another round of euphoria when it comes to all things artificial intelligence.
Yeah, you add .AI to the end of your name, or you say that you're, you know, a company that's working with AI or ChatGPT like BuzzFeed, and you see what investors do. It certainly set the investment world scrambling to figure out who will benefit. Carol, our next guest has some thoughts on how ChatGPT could change voice-first products and services. Very pleased to have with us Nithya Thadani, CEO at the voice technology software company Rain, joining us via Zoom in New York City. Nithya, good to have you with us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you with us. Explain how Rain works.
So Rain is a conversational AI company. We build voice products for deskless workers. So if you think about Alexa or Google Assistant, we build professional grade versions of those assistants specifically for an audience called deskless workers. So these are workers who do not work, you know, at a desk literally every day. They're moving around in their job. So in industries like construction, automotive, healthcare, professionals moving around in their jobs, and they don't, you know, they need information and data at their fingertips. So we are able to give that to them through voice, critical information that they need at their fingertips.
How fast is your business growing?
You know, we just raised a recent round of funding. So we have $15 million total in funding. And, you know, we're really excited for what the next 18 months is going to bring.
But what does that mean in terms of how much your business has grown? I don't know, give us the last 12 months or so.
Yeah, I mean, we are, so right now our core product is called Ortho. It is a product for the automotive industry. So if you think about technicians who are working on vehicles, we essentially provide them OEM data at their fingertips. So instead of having to get out from under a vehicle, go over to a computer, search a database for specifications like fluid type and whatever, you know, whatever else they might need in the moment, they can get that at their fingertips. So right now our product is actually, you know, we are piloting in a number of different shops and pre-revenue at the moment.
Is the technology that you have at Rain, is it about the database? Is it about where things are being found, where the answers are being found? Or is it about the voice recognition technology, or is it both?
It's both, right? So it's essentially taking what is, you know, a number of different databases that exist today, OEM data that then feeds into another database called Motor, for example, where these technicians typically get their information, and making that data conversational. And I know we're going to talk about ChatGPT, but there are just so many parallels between that kind of conversational nature of the interaction. So, you know, it's taking this data, making it conversational, but also making it domain specific. And what I mean by that is a lot of the AI that's out there today is generalist. So if you think of Alexa or you think of even ChatGPT, you're asking a question and you're getting a, you know, they want to serve the general public. So you're getting a response back. When you go really deep into an industry like automotive or healthcare, as we are, you really need to understand the nuances of that specific industry. So I'll give you a little bit of an example here. If you were to say wheel nut, which is a very common term to a auto technician who's repairing a car, to our assistant, they'll understand it as wheel nut. If you were to say that to a general assistant like Alexa or Google Assistant, they'll hear it as will not. Mm. And that's because they're not trained to hear wheel nut, right? So what we're doing is really training our assistants for the way that professionals speak to one another. What is the lingo that they use every day? And how do we make sure that they understand that so that they're not changing the way they speak?
So in other words, if they want information or something, they're speaking into something and then getting it on some kind of device. Is that kind of the back and forth that ultimately is happening and will happen, in your view, a lot more?
Yes. Yeah, so they're in this case, you know, the modality can be a tablet, it can be a mobile phone, but you are essentially kind of asking for information. And it could also be a device that doesn't have a screen on it, but a microphone. But you're essentially asking for information in the moment, and you're getting an answer back rather than kind of getting a number of links or more databases that you have to look into. Again, a lot of similarities to ChatGPT in right. that, you know, it's kind of taking away the layers of searching that you would do on your own and giving you a distilled answer.
To be fair, like I walk into the house or walk out of the house and I'm constantly like, or especially when I'm leaving, hey, Google, you know, what's the temperature? Like I'm definitely having a conversation increasingly, not just inside my head, but increasingly with the devices in my home. And they're useful, whether it's time, whether it's information. So, you know, you take that on a professional level, and I get where you're going. You did say you were pre-revenue. Talk to us though a little bit about ChatGPT and all the developments that have come out about it. How is that impacting how you're thinking about your business and the growth of it?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, listen, this chatbot is kind of truly transformational, right? You've got suddenly something that allows you to ask any question on any subject or topic in natural language, so how you and I would speak to one another, and you're going to get an answer back instantaneously in seconds. And so, you know, you can ask for, you know, the history of pop music, and you're going to get an answer back within moments, probably faster than you could have asked that question. And that's exciting and interesting to us for two reasons. Number one is it's not pulling that answer, it's generating it, right? It's almost as though the AI is reading a number of different information sources and coming up with its own perspective. That's why it's called generative AI. But the more interesting thing is that it's really doing that in a human and conversational way. So Carol, if you know someone were to ask you a question and you didn't know that person, you would not answer robotically or kind of in a singular way. You would make inferences about the person based on the context, where you are, you know, how they're asking the question, who they are. And that's what ChatGPT is really doing. They are understanding human language, both written and spoken, and the nuances of it, and they're trying to mimic that. So as that technology kind of moves forward, it's really exciting for us, you know, in this conversational AI industry to see more and more people engaging in that kind of human AI way.
Totally can see it. It just makes a lot of sense. Really nice, Nithya, to check in with you. Really appreciate it. She is the CEO at the voice technology software company, Rain, joining us via Zoom in New York City. Just quick back to, I guess safe to say, our top headline at this hour, certainly when it comes to earnings, Meta shares off and running, up 18%. After the first quarter revenue outlook, definitely rosy, and a huge share buyback authorization.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization. We live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Hey, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, I've kidded many times, everything is awesome. You look at the market reaction because we have a rally underway, as you just heard from Charlie. Welcome, everybody. Of course, this is Bloomberg Business Week on this Fed Wednesday, first Fed meeting of 2023. Carol Masser, Tim Stenovic, live in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio, streaming on YouTube and Bloomberg Quick Take, and yields backing off. I mean, markets, investors, traders saying, we think the Fed's just about done.
Yeah, the big question is, does Fed Chair Jay Powell think this is awesome, what he's seeing in markets right now?
Well, it was interesting, and I thought, you know, Jeff Rosenberg of BlackRock making a comment and stressing in reaction with our TV colleagues as the Fed made its decision and we went through the presser, certainty is not appropriate. Certainty is not appropriate. That's what Jay Powell said. So, you know, there is no exact science in all of this. And Jay Powell, yes, saying we're making progress on inflation, but also saying, hey, folks, we've got some more moves ahead of us.
Here's some other things that stuck out to me, Carol. Yeah. Further rate hikes will be appropriate. It's premature to declare victory. We have a lot of work to do. And if our outlook turns true, then I don't see us cutting rates this year.
I think that's really key. And yet the market's saying differently.
Did they just ignore all that?
I don't know. But the traders have been thinking differently, despite the dot plot that we got in the last update of projections, which shows the Fed continuing to raise rates further along and above 5%. Traders have been saying differently. I do think it was interesting that Jay Powell said the Fed is strongly committed to bringing inflation to that 2% goal. He's not backing off of it. He thinks it's doable.
And yet we continue to get data that point in the other direction. I point no further than the JOLTS data that we got earlier today. 1.9 jobs available for every unemployed person here in the United States.
Well,
it's going in the wrong direction.
And he highlighted that as, you know, we're still continuing to see some strength, significant strength, if you will, in terms of the labor market, and talking about, you know, reducing inflation likely to require below trend growth, and also talking about, you know, the Fed having to stay the course, but also talking about, let's see, the base case is return to 2% inflation without a big jobless jump. That's the fingers crossed. That's the soft landing.
Can he stick it?
You know, we shall see. We talk about living in different times, and maybe that will be it. All right, so let's get to the markets, because it's been an interesting day, no doubt about it. A lot of risk on trade here, and we've got a good guest who has to make some investment decisions and put money to work in specific names and entities.
Sandy Villery is portfolio manager at Villery & Co. They got $1.5 billion in assets under management. They're based in New Orleans, on the phone from there this afternoon. The Villery Equity Fund, we should note, well, this was, you know, as of this morning, up 10% so far this year. It's beating the S&P 500, putting it in 80th percentile when it comes to other funds in the category. Top holdings include Freeport, McMurrin, Visa, J.B. Hunt, and more, Carol.
All right, so let's get to it. He is based in New Orleans, and we find him there on this Fed Wednesday. So, Sandy, good to have you here with us. We do like to talk names and stocks with you, but let's talk macro first of all. Fed decision, a bit of a surprise, or the market reaction, a bit of a surprise? How do you see it?
Yeah, and Carol, thanks for having me.
Sure.
You know, when we looked at Powell today, and when he's definitely sounded hawkish. You know, he starts saying that rate increases would be ongoing. He gave little indication there at the end of the rate hike cycle. You know, but when I look at some of the dovish language, which y'all were referring to earlier, I mean, he said they are acknowledging that inflation's easing, you know, and they are making progress. So, I mean, he's in a tough spot because he knows historically the Fed tends to overdo it. They raise too much, and he's just trying to keep us out of a deeper recession, you know, but he really doesn't want to pivot too soon and then inflation just heats right back up again, you know, like it did in the 70s, and then we're in all sorts of trouble. So it's the cross currents why you, I guess, saw the market, you know, down sharply this morning and then rallying hard. People are trying to figure out, you know, which direction. And I think the bond market is smarter than the stock market, and it is telling you with the 10-year, you know, falling, the yield falling, I think it's telling you that even though he's saying he won't cut by the end of the year, that you possibly could see a cut maybe as, you know, in November or December.
While we know they're always data dependent and, you know, nothing is certain, Jay Powell did say the Fed is not exploring pausing then restarting rate hikes. I think that's a big one, Tim, you know, because it's that idea of, okay, we're not going to pause and thinking we're going to have to raise again. So I don't know whether he's just saying, hey, folks, we're going to get it all out now, so we're going to continue, or he's just so certain that things, inflation will continue to trend lower.
Why did the markets, though, Sandy, latch on to the dovish language rather than the hawkish language? Because there was certainly some dovish language in there, but the hawkish language was there as well, and they're choosing to focus on the dovish language.
It's incredible, but I think maybe they're focused on, you know, simply the bond market. And when you see those yields fall, it's telling you we're either going to some sort of, you know, shallow recession or rates are going lower. And so I think they're looking at the way that's acting, and then I think that's carrying forward into the stock market. It was interesting. We got that JOLTS survey this morning, and you look at November, we had 10.44, you know, million job openings, and now we've got a little bit over 11 million job openings. And as you said earlier, 1.9 jobs available for every person looking. So I think he's got to be a little bit cautious that, you know, you could get some wage inflation. But at the end of the day, the market went with the bond market and started to rally as you know, as yields fell on the 10-year.
How do you feel about valuations right now?
You know, I think it's a tale of two different markets. If you look at 2022, you saw, you know, growth stocks off over 30% as interest rates went up, and growth stocks tend to move inversely, and you saw value only down about 2%. So clearly last year people hid in the large cap dividend value stocks, the Johnson & Johnsons, et cetera, and it just left growth, you know, sort of for dead, which is what we really do as an active stock picker. We tend to try to, you know, find these high quality growth companies that are trading at really reasonable prices. And I think there's plenty of great valuations in individual stocks. And so we like growth. We were, you know, adding to some of it in some of the lows last year, and it's picked up, you know, sharply this year. We've seen growth already up, you know, 12% year to date, and value's only up a little bit over 2%. So there's been a great rotation, but I would be fishing in the growth pond rather than the value pond.
Give us some of those growth stocks that you'd be fishing for in that growth pond.
Yeah, so one of the ones we like is ON Semiconductor, a great play on the 5G build-out. They've also got a lot of demand from electric vehicles, things like alternative energy, industrial automation. We tend to follow great CEOs, and Hassan El-Khoury, he used to run a company called Cypress Semiconductor that we were a large shareholder in, and he's come over to ON Semi some years ago. He's already transforming it from, you know, a higher growth, higher margin business from, you know, something that was more commodity oriented. He's getting, you know, he wanted to have gross margins near 45%, you know, basically 2 years from now. He's already there, and he's moving to 48 to 50% because they're growing an area called silicon carbide, which is just growing extremely quickly. You know, this is for, you know, things like electric vehicle batteries, and, you know, Goldman will tell you 13 million electric vehicle batteries will use silicon carbide by 2030, and that's only at 1 million today. So he's just a great manager. It's a great business, and I think this is why you're seeing, you know, things like ON do quite well when you have, you know, competitors maybe like an Intel that can't get out of their own way.
So even though it's up something like 19% so far, 25%, because we've seen certainly an uptick, if you will, in today's trade, kind of pushing everything higher. I mean, alone today, it's up another 6% here. Valuation feels about right here based on the outlook?
Yeah, I mean, I still see these guys making over $4.50 in earnings, you know, basically this year. So you're looking at a stock that's under 16 times earnings, which is, you know, in my opinion, you know, I'd say fair value or undervalued, given the transformation of a more profitable business, higher margins, and just growing much more quickly as they get into the non-commodity side of their business.
All right, going to leave it on that note. Listen, Sandy, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Sandy Villery, Portfolio Manager at Villery & Company, joining us on the phone from New Orleans.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live each weekday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.